Are you looking for something fun and unique to give away in your merch orders or at your shows? Look no further. Hit me up today to order 1-inch buttons for your band, label, or other project. High-quality metal pinback buttons for your friends and fans' battle jackets, messenger bags, and guitar straps. $33 for 100 buttons shipped in the U.S. Message me on IG at Everything Remade to get started. Hello, and welcome to Everything Remade, a podcast that I hope is about growth as much as it is about music. I'm Edie Quinn, and we have a great show lined up for you today. Before we get started, though, I'd like to remind you that we have a Patreon page at patreon.com/humanmachine. There, for as little as $3, you can support the show and read lots of zines, comics, get behind the sneak peeks, guitar playthroughs, and all kinds of stuff like that. patreon.com/humanmachine. And now I'd like to play something for you. You're hearing Family Portraits by They Hung Us From Power Lines, featuring my new pal, Lacey Jade, on vocals. You can find the EP everywhere where you listen to music.
Of embarrassing, but I think I was maybe 11 or 12 years old, and I found In the End by Black Veil Brides. God, I remember listening to that, and like, I'd never heard anything like it before at 11 years old, and I was just like, I gotta make this my whole personality now. And I did. I really did for about 4 years. Yeah.
Was it like, what kind of music was playing around you other than that, like at your house? Like, did your parents listen to a lot of music and it was just night and day from that?
Absolutely. So my mom really loves Led Zeppelin and like Black Sabbath and stuff, which I do love. And my dad's like a big like Tom Petty, it's like Steely Dan kind of guy.
Okay, Tom Petty, Florida boy. All right.
Yes. So I would definitely grew up with a lot of that, Creedence Clearwater Revival and stuff. But then like when I heard my first like Black Veil Brides song, I was like, oh my God. You know, I went to Warped Tour for like a really long time and I saw them and I was just like all over like any band that was sold in Hot Topic from that point on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just kind of everything was ramped up to like 11, right?
Yes, absolutely.
It felt intense when your life, you know, you as a preteen or whatever, you know, everything feels intense, right? So
yeah,
it was the right place, right time for that.
Yeah, I had never been as obsessed with anything as I was with them when I found them. So,
yeah.
Definitely important.
Did you like immediately adopt the aesthetics as well? Like the...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I like begged my mom to take me to Hot Topic every Saturday. And yeah, she did. And I ended up with a lot of like sweaters with the... like safety pins in them. And got my first pair of Doc Martens.
Yeah,
loved them, never went back.
it's funny, like this is only tangentially related, but like I saw, like I was just thinking, you know, it when stuff like that was first coming out, as like the aesthetics of all that like came from, you know, like Orchid, you know, all the like white belt, black hair dye, you know, all the aesthetics from that came from like what people would, you know, call the real emo or whatever, you know.
Yes.
And then when this, when certain bands adopted it and stuff, then a lot of people were kind of like, well, what are we supposed to look like now, right? And and it was this kind of, it was this kind of weird thing. And it wasn't until, you know, later that people were like, nah, it's cool, it doesn't matter, like we'll just look how we want to look or whatever, which is awesome. But it, like, I started immediately thinking about like how, you know, I saw like somebody posting some because like I follow some like sort of, sometimes it's like sort of embarrassing, like I'll follow like some outfit accounts on Instagram.
I do that.
Cause I don't know how to dress. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm a middle-aged 13-year-old girl. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know how to dress. Right. So, and this one, like, she was just posting, oh, I just got these cute earrings from this Etsy store or whatever. And it was a safety pin, but it was like on an earring backer. And I was just like, that seems gross. Like, because I grew up and my friends are like literally just like shoving, like putting rubbing alcohol on it or whatever, and then just literally shoving them through their ears or their nostrils or whatever. And then, and then it's like, this is this like bougie, like, oh, like look at this punk aesthetic or whatever, but it's like on like an actual earring bag, like but don't be nasty. No, I'm not actually putting this, like, I don't know, it's just so weird.
I would really rather put a sterilized safety pin through my ear and just like roll with that.
Like, yeah, it was just so weird. And like, you know, to clarify, like there's so many things that like people just like take and sort of like stick on a earring backer that I'm like all about, you know, like people make the earrings out of the little troll dolls and stuff. I mean, that's not my vibe, but like I'm like, that's cool, like, you know. But this, the safety pin, I was just like, this doesn't sit right.
It serves its original purpose without the earring backer.
Right.
It's just a needle.
Right. And like, I don't know. It's also like, just like, once again, tangentially related, but like, it's also funny now because like, I'm thrifting a lot of clothes and I'm finding a lot of clothes that like the cycle of like what was cool and is not cool, and so it's in secondhand now, but I think it's cool, is like I am thrifting a sweater and I'm just like surprised that the thumb holes are there, and I'm like, oh, cool, because like it's just out of fashion enough to where it's turning up in, you know, or the people who had this for 7 years or however long like have outgrown it, you know, quote unquote. Like, I don't know, it's just really funny. It's like and then, you know, of course in another 7 years it'll be cool again, you know, and people,
and then they'll start making more brand new ones.
I mean, we're probably already at the point where like, you know, something from a 2009 Hot Topic store is on Depop as vintage, you know. Right,
$55 plus shipping.
And it's, I don't know, but I don't really know anything about Depop, because like I need to have another thing where I can like look at cool things and be like, that's cool, and but I cannot afford it, and it would be trouble.
The band merch on there is crazy. It is a financial decision to even download Depop onto your phone and have the application always there. There is so much cool shit on there.
I believe it, because I've seen people just post just in their stories or whatever on Instagram or whatever, just like, oh yeah, Metallica like 2002 tour t-shirt, $200. And you're like, what? Like, I mean,
yeah,
I don't know. Like that. Yeah. I mean, that's wild. Like
the price is crazy.
Yeah. But, you know, getting back to actually music and not just like music related stuff. music was always like sort of around in your house and everything. And then you became, you know, obsessed with like sort of your own niche that you found. And,
yes, for sure.
But like probably 11, you know, years old, you know, or whatever, you weren't necessarily thinking like, I could do this. I want to do this. But were you playing any instruments in school band or anything like that?
So I think the year before that, when I was in like fifth grade, I think it was, I played trombone for like a year. And then I quit that just because I wasn't really interested in doing like middle school and high school band. So I quit that. And then I didn't play anything for a couple years. And then I think when I was 13, I started taking drum lessons and I got a drum set. And I was like dead set on becoming a drummer. But now, oh man, I haven't played drums in four or five years. But I did definitely want to be a drummer for a long while.
So it did like, not necessarily immediately, but shortly after, you know, you sort of discovered like this, mm-hmm. like heavier, more intense, like kind of stuff that you're into. You were like, hey, why isn't this something that I could do? Like, and you pursued it.
Yeah. To an extent, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I really enjoyed playing drums, but I gave up after a while, unfortunately.
Yeah. What kind of stuff were they going over with you in your lessons and whatnot?
So I think the first song he ever taught me was Heartbreaker, like by Joan Jett or something. Okay. I think but he was really cool. His name is Kevin. Him and his brother ran a music store just down the street from me here. And he, you know, Kevin did drum lessons and his brother did guitar lessons. And you could bring in a CD and they would sit down with you and listen to whatever was on the CD. And they would just write out the tabs, like, right in front of you. So, you know, to get me acquainted with like drums and like the movements, he had me start out on some like classic rock stuff because he was in a classic rock cover band that played our county fair. And then after a while, he was like, what do you like? And I brought him in this like Pierce the Veil CD, and he wrote out the entire album for me in like drum tabs. And I learned it. So he was really willing to work with any of his students on anything. And I don't know, it was really special, like a really, really special experience for a young kid trying to learn an instrument, for sure.
Yeah, because like, you know, I don't hear this story a lot when I ask folks that are younger than me, but like my experience, like I never had music lessons, but my friends that did, like my experience hearing from them was that the stuff that they liked or the stuff that they wanted to pursue was always looked down on, like, mm-hmm. you know, and people, oh, this isn't real music, like you want to learn this, you know, or whatever.
Yes.
And like that was kind of like, not necessarily, like I said, I didn't take lessons, but anytime I would ask somebody older than me, like when I was first starting guitar or whatever, like it would be like, oh, you don't want to learn that shit, like learn Stairway to Heaven, you know, or whatever. Like that was like, Like, I just said I can play the Ramones. Like, how do you expect me to jump to Stairway to Heaven? But, like, yeah I mean, it was, it is good to hear, obviously, that, like, you know, at some point, people seem to just sort of across the board be like, hey, if we want to get people really interested, we got to meet them where they live. You know, we got to, mm-hmm. like, we got to let them show us what they want to do, and not just be like, well, you need to do Rudiments for 7 hours a day, you know, or whatever.
He definitely drilled Rudiments into me for a while. The first, like, 10 minutes of my practice with him, it was like a couple times a week I'd practice, and for the first 10 minutes he would be like, okay, paradiddles, I'm putting a timer on. But then after that, he would just talk to me about, you know, what's the next show I'm going to, like, what's an album I found this week that I really liked. And I don't know, I think, like, he really wanted all of his students to, like, know the technicalities of it, but I think his main goal was just to have people around here just, like, interested and passionate about music.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, I get it, because I think I could be off base, and maybe this doesn't matter, but, like, I get it, because, like, I think that learning that stuff is probably more difficult once you've settled into your own habits. Like, I watch a video about paradiddles, like, and I can do them. Like, I'm not incapable of doing it, but, like, I watch videos of, oh, and this is how you do this, you know, like, technique or whatever, and it's like they're speaking another language. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, that looks really cool and awesome, and it looks so simple, and I just don't get it. Like, but so I mean, I get it, but yeah, I think probably there's, you know, got to be a healthy mix there. What do you think drew you about the drums specifically? Was it like, was it the physical nature of the instrument, or was it like, just, okay, this is like one of the more obvious parts of the song? Like, what exactly made drums the thing?
I always just seemed to, like, whenever I listened to a song, I would always, like, focus my attention on the drum parts and the rhythms, and I was pretty sure and certain that I could not learn guitar, because I just felt like I couldn't do it, but I definitely knew that I wanted to do some kind of, like, instrument, and I think that's why I chose drums, was just because it, like, caught my attention in every song I heard.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like guitar was too cerebral, or was there, was it a finger dexterity thing?
I have small hands and I can't stretch my fingers very far.
Yeah.
So I feel like I know a couple songs on guitar, but they're definitely shaky, and I haven't, like, sat down and tried to learn anything, because it doesn't, like, scratch that itch, so to speak, that drums did for me. And I was really angry all the time too, so I just wanted to, like, hit shit, so
so what was the sort of falling out of love with the instrument then, to where you sort of more or less, like, you know, put it on the back burner, gave it up, or whatever?
I really don't know. I mean, I feel like it was, like, a culmination of things, because I had a hard time when I was, like, in middle school and in high school, and, like, somewhere along the line, like, I just stopped liking everything I previously liked. And, like, one day I put it down, and I never picked back up. But that's okay, because, like, I still have that kit. You know, I can go back to it at any time, if I feel like I want to. But I've got, you know, I'm doing other stuff now. And I'm still, like, around the music. So I guess I didn't fall out of love with it for too long.
Yeah. No, for sure. It's, I mean, obviously, like, there's a lot of value in being able to do different things, and not only like do it, but just having the language like of someone who can do it, you know, like mm-hmm. it makes you able to communicate with, you know, your band members and everything better. But like, yeah, for sure. I mean, drums is one of those things where, I mean, if you did decide to get back into that, like, you would absolutely never want for a musical project again. Like, you know, everyone always needs a drummer.
Yeah, that is true.
One thing that I could be wrong about this as well, but I took it that like you were sort of like when you were looking to start a band before, you know, They Hung Us From Power Lines got together, you specifically were wanting to do vocals. Is that right or is that not?
Well, if that's in reference, I know I made a post like on my Instagram story maybe a month ago where I was looking for people to start another band with me doing vocals. That's just because I want two bands. I never really wanted to be a vocalist. Like, that's not to say that I'm not extremely like happy and comfortable where I'm at, but it kind of with Power Lines just happened by accident. Okay. Like a complete accident. Yeah, we just kind of formed out of nowhere with zero plans of having to do that. But I would definitely start another band where I do vocals. 100% for sure.
So you said it was by accident. So like, how do you mean? Like, what is it? Just like the other folks were jamming and they just threw it out there like, we need a vocalist? Or like,
yes. So our band is me, and then it is Tim from Middling and all three members of Pickpocket. And oh, okay. For one of the shows last summer, Pickpocket's drummer couldn't make it, so we had been going down to the Columbus area to practice because Tim was going to fill in on drums for Curtis so that Pickpocket could still play the show. And we were just kind of playing musical instruments, and I was there because I go everywhere with them. And they were just like switching instruments, like Hunter, our drummer, like moved onto the drums, and you know, Tim grabbed the guitar, and they were like, well, if we're playing the instruments, like, we need someone to scream. And Hunter pointed at me and he was like, why don't you do it? And I was like, I don't know, but I had secretly been wanting them to ask me to do that. I don't think they know that, but I had really been secretly like wanting to be part of it.
Yeah, that's why you were always there, right? You're like, well.
Well, that's not why I was always there, but that I think that
it didn't
that
hurt.
Might have been a factor, but
yeah.
But yeah, they asked me to like stand up and scream, and I was like, "Yes, sir." So I did that, and like we jammed for a second, and then we stopped, and Hunter was like, "That's the new band." And I was like, "Okay."
So
yeah.
You said that like you're kind of hoping for this in a way. So like it wasn't, you're 100% on the spot, like maybe 95% on the spot. Cause you always like, you know, maybe kind of had that in your back of your mind. Like this is a possibility.
Yeah.
But what, like, was it just like when you're driving around and you're screaming along to CDs in your car or whatever, like what was it that you were like, yeah, this is something that I could do?
I don't like to scream in my car because I'm worried that people around me are going to hear me and be worried. But I think the first time I ever screamed in like a musical sense was at a Midling show. So I just got like real comfortable at screaming, you know, at the shows. And then after a while I was like, I could do that. Like, it's hard, but I just think I got comfortable, you know, with friends at like local shows, and it made me feel confident enough to like go out and try to do it.
Yeah. And had you always been kind of a writer, or was writing like lyrics and stuff a totally new experience for you?
I'm really big into writing like poetry and stuff. Mm-hmm. I had never really written a song for the purposes of being like released until not that long ago, like a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. But I have always really enjoyed writing. I have a poetry zine that I take to shows and people can pick them up. But yeah, writing lyrics is definitely like a new game for me. I'm trying to improve them a little bit.
How do you feel like it differs from writing poetry? Like, other than the obvious, like this has to fit a certain cadence or whatever. Do you approach it like from a different space in your mind, or I don't know how else to ask that. Sorry.
A little. No, I think that was a good wording. I don't know. People in the band tell me that like you write poems, you should be able to like easily sit down and crack lyrics out, but it's not. Yeah. No, yeah. It's really not that easy for me, at least, because I feel like writing a song and like releasing it is going to get way more, or hopefully way more traction than like if I'm writing in a Word document and then printing it and trying to hand it to people. Like, I feel like it's going to get more, a little bit more attention in song form. So I really try to like buckle down and like push out the best thing that I can, mm-hmm. which is a little nerve wracking sometimes, especially if you're new at it. So it's just different for me in that I know that it's going to reach more people this way.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a little bit of like, there's a little bit of a shield for you, because you're not presenting it only as words. Like, you've got the music there to sort of back you up, right? But at the same time, you're like, yeah, this is going out to potentially like thousands times more people that didn't seek it out directly. Like, this is just something that people are experiencing in causation with the music. And yeah, so it's like it's like, what, you know, one point in your favor and one point in anxiety's favor, just like, you know.
Yes.
But what about like, so here's the thing, like when I write lyrics, I really have to be in a different spot. Like when I write lyrics, like it's like almost like I can't have distractions. I gotta be just like in a lane, just like cruising. But when mm-hmm. I write poetry, like it's better if I'm like distracted. Like I feel like I grab things from the air in this way, mm-hmm. like that is more natural. But like with a lyric, with songs, I really have to be cognizant of like what's happened before, what's going to happen later in the song. Like, do you know, mm-hmm. does that make sense? It does
for sure. I am a little bit the opposite. Like if I'm writing a poem, it's normally based on like one feeling that I'm having like right now, and I have to sit down and like bust it out before I lose that feeling. But I feel like when I'm writing lyrics, like I kind of need distractions.
So it's like the other way around for you.
Yes. Yeah. So I don't know. I just kind of like pull things. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do feel like I'm definitely a lot more focused when I'm writing a poem versus a song. But yeah, they're all based on pretty much the same thing.
I think with me, I think that the difference for me is that a poem can just kind of end when I want it to. And a song is like, a song has a, like, it's already dictated to me when it ends. And like, I don't necessarily have to take it all the way from the beginning to the end, but like, if I've said everything that I needed to say in a poem with four lines, then that's fine. But if it's a 2-minute song and I've only got four lines, that's not probably going to work, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's some bands that do that really well. Like, this is the second time I've mentioned Orchid, but like Orchid will just have like less than a paragraph of lyrics and they're incredible. And you're like, holy shit, you know, like that did the whole thing. And this is somebody repeating the same line four times in a row or whatever, and it works and it's great. But I don't know. That's not, you know, my thing. And so like, here's just this fucking mess of words. Here's just like all the words in the entire world on the page. And
I definitely write a little bit long-winded. we have two vocalists, me and Carter. He's our other vocalist, and he told me that I write like a rapper, and I don't really know what that means. I think it means that I have too many words.
Just a lot of words.
But I'm not very good at getting my point across in a couple concise sentences. And I've got 2.5 minutes of song to work with, so I'm talking my ass off for sure.
Yeah, I've done the like, oh, here's this part of the song where the line repeats itself four times. Like I've done that a couple times out mm-hmm. of like literally like 250 songs. Like, and it's just, I mean, I guess one argument can be just like, well, like write a stronger line and then like you would feel more confident about saying the same thing four times in a row. But also I just don't always feel like that's the right solution for the, like, I like to do lots of things, like, mm-hmm. and, I don't know, if you feel like writing 200 songs, that you should spread your ideas out a little bit, you know? Sometimes you can just repeat the thing. Sometimes you could do it every other. I never thought that some of the stuff that I do was so strange. And then I play with other people, and they're like, you really do things four times and then just randomly three times for no reason whatsoever. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess so. I don't.
Well, so. If it's not strange to you, that just means that you're artistic and unique. And I think that's important. Like, there's no right or wrong way. So
yeah, exactly. And yeah, like, I mean, whether it's one band with 200 songs or whether it's your 10th band and they all got 20 songs, right? Like, ultimately you have to find like the way that keeps you as engaged as possible, that keeps you satisfied artistically, you know, or whatever, because like nobody else is going to care if you don't care. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, so yeah, I mean, sorry, Jason, you know, but sometimes it's just going to be three times. Sometimes it's going to be seven, you know, I don't know. But yeah, I want to hear a little bit more about your zine. How did you get into zine making?
So my brother, he's quite a bit older than me. He moved away from Ohio. He moved to Colorado in like 2017, I think. And he had me come to this like going away party that he had, and he left me a box of like zines and like actual magazines from like the late 90s and early 2000s. And it was like Counterculture magazine and like it's like catalog on how to like press your own buttons and like pins and shit. And then there was one that was like anti-Christian zine, and I ate that shit up. I was like 14 reading that, and I had never seen something like handmade and old to me like that before. And it was like things that I really identified with. And he had a poetry one in there that was like super, super like mature and like artistic poetry. I couldn't even wrap my 14-year-old brain around it, but I kept them. And I kept going back to them. And then later last year, I found a printer on like Facebook Marketplace, and I got it. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna take all the poems from my notes app. I'm gonna type them up, print them out, and take them to house shows and just like either give them away or sell them if people feel so inclined. But they're pay what you can. Like, I really don't care if you pay for them or not, because I just want people to have physical poetry. I think is really important to have. But yeah, it's the zine right now is just five poems. It's nothing big, and I also have an interview of Pickpocket in there because they're some of my best friends. So I figured it would not be weird if I did a quick little interview of them. But yeah, that's all it is right now. Just some poems about being sad and a picture of a flower is really all it is.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome, though. Were there any music zines in the stash that you got left? Like, were there any like Comet Bus or Punk Planet or anything like that?
You know, I have them sitting right here. Let me look through them real quick. On the top of the stack, this is not an old zine. I got this in Rhode Island last year. It's by the name on it is I Always Fall Up the Stairs. This shit is incredible. It's poems, there's an interview of Olf in here. advertisements for people to make flyers for your band. Shout out, I Always Fall Up the Stairs. I love that shit.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I don't know. I have my 20 reasons to abandon Christianity. There's one here called No War, but the Class War. I have a grassroots newspaper called Resistance about just like war and like politics and stuff right here. A lot of these are quite political.
That's awesome.
There are some music ones. I don't know any of the bands in them.
Yeah.
Just because they're way too cool for me.
I had a friend that I played in a band with, and he gave me a huge stack of zines, but most of them were ruined because we had this like water. We had a flood in our old basement, and it sucked. But yeah, I think I did my first zine like just, you know, in high school, and just I don't even, you know, remember exactly what was in it, just talking about records that we liked and just our stupid shitty opinions, you know, at the time or whatever.
Yeah.
But just like getting back into them as much as I have in the last couple of years, I'm just like, you know, there's so many access points to DIY. And that was definitely one of them for me. Just like how you can just, you know, whether it's like going down to the Kinko's, you know, and running them off on like a stolen card or whatever, you know, we were doing at the time. Or, you know, like you said, like getting a cheap printer, you know, a halfway decent cheap printer and doing it like that. Did you come back to that? Like, was this before or after the band had gotten started?
I started like writing and printing the zine. I think like, well, I've been writing it forever, but I think I started like putting it into like a format to where I could print it and like actually create it a couple months before the band got together. And it took me forever to actually like make them real, because the printer that I found on Facebook Marketplace ended up not working. So I had to go to my local UPS store, figure that out. And it lined up to where the first time I could ever like take my zines somewhere with me to like have them distributed or at least looked at was our first show this January.
That's awesome.
So, or it was our second show.
Yeah.
In January, but yeah, it was awesome the way things just kind of lined up. People grabbed some, and it was awesome. It made me feel incredible that someone would grab a shoddily made zine with 5 poems in it and just take it. It was awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, we sort of skipped over this part a little bit, but like, was there a sort of formative experience for you, like going to a show or whatever, that like, what was the first sort of DIY show that you went to that's more like the shows that, you know, your band will play now? And like, how did you find out about that?
Well, I'm really new, like frighteningly new to like the DIY thing.
Uh-huh.
And my first like DIY show proper was in December of 2022. It was a Midlane show, and that was also Midlane and Pickpocket's first time playing together. I was there because I had met Tim. We lived in the same town, and we were like dating. We're still dating, but that was like our first, like, hey, come check out my band. And I was like, absolutely. And I'm so, so glad I did, because I didn't know that, like, local music that wasn't a cover band was a thing in our area. So we went to this coffee shop, and they're just, like, playing on a stage in a coffee shop in Mansfield, Ohio. And it was wild. I had never seen anything like it. I had never been to a show that didn't have
security and barriers and
barricades, yeah. Cops at the door. It was just, and everything was fine. Like, it was a crazy experience. And I met all of my best friends that day. And I never, like, going to that show, I never would have guessed, oh, in a year, you're gonna play shows with these dudes, and you're gonna talk to them every day. And it was just crazy. But yeah, that was my first DIY show, was a Midlane show.
That's
about
awesome.
A year and a half ago. Yeah. Love those guys.
What, so, you know, from the time, like, it doesn't sound like the band has even been a thing for very long. So, like, going from 0 to 60 that fast, you know, or whatever. Like, the first time when everybody's like, okay, we've got a few songs, like, we're going to go record them. Like, what was that like for you? Was it just like, you can't sleep the day before? Like, it just all nerves? Or were you fairly comfortable with things by that point?
Well, I think we started the band in June or July of last year. So we've been together for less than a year.
Okay.
And, you know, they jammed, and then I wrote to that, and we kind of, like, figured out, you know, what our sound's going to be like, sort of a little bit, I think. And, you know, we had practice, like, pretty often for the first few months, and we really, like, hammered out those first three songs that are on the EP. And then we played our first, we've only played two shows, but we played those two shows without having recorded anything. But when we went to record, we had already played two shows and a really, really small, embarrassing secret set. So my nerves of, like, screaming in front of people weren't so bad. And we recorded with our good friend Marshall. So yeah, the nerves weren't so bad. But it did feel like a dream to be, you know, recording a song that Tim and I wrote while we were sitting on our couch in our living room. It was a wild experience for sure. But yeah, the nerves weren't so bad.
And going back to this secret show, what was embarrassing about it?
I didn't know what I was doing. And we weren't on the flyer because it was a secret set. Who was on the show? It was in Pittsburgh at Mr. Roboto, and I believe the lineup was Leonardo Decapitated, Midlane, Pickpocket, and My Medikit. And I'm pretty cool with six from Morning Dew, and six was in My Medikit. And I reached out to them, and I was like, hey, I'm going to be at this show with the whole gang. Do you think it would be okay if we, like, got up and did, like, two songs? And they were like, yeah, for sure. So I was nervous as hell all day long because I'd never been on a stage before and I'd never like screamed into a microphone before. So we got up there and we did that, and like I got up there, I was shaking, I was sweating, and I didn't say anything. Like, I didn't introduce us. I didn't say anything. We just kind of started playing and then we were done, and I didn't say anything then, and I just left. And it was real awkward for me because I don't think like people expected there to be another band that wasn't on the bill. Mm-hmm. It was really fun, very scary. I think it was a learning experience. But I think when Pickpocket went on after us, they were like, they got off to a little bit of a rocky start because I just felt like the crowd was like a little confused. But that's okay.
Yeah. I'll admit there's, what you're describing, which is basically, get up there, play for 6 minutes, not say a single word before, after, or during, and then get off the stage, leaving people confused, is like, that was kind of par for the course for a lot of shows, like in the 90s. Like, yeah. Like bands would just, and then there was the opposite to that, which was bands that would like discuss, you know, political issues and stuff between the songs and whatnot. But like, yeah, it's like once you're around that a little bit more, you're like, oh wait, like, maybe that wasn't so embarrassing. Maybe people just thought that was the vibe or whatever.
Yeah, I was definitely trying to emulate like a mysterious like 90s band type thing. I don't think I pulled it off too well with the shaking and the and the nerves that I was having. I feel like we have a decent mix of the two now, because like I'll speak a little bit when I'm on stage, but I don't like to say anything now other than anything about like politics. Like I'll talk my ass off about politics when I'm up there, but I really don't want to be like talking about shit that's kind of like arbitrary in a sense.
Yeah, sure.
So yeah, now I just say hello and thank you, goodbye. And then somewhere in between there, I like shit on Israel a little bit or say something about a boycott, and then we go on with our set. But yeah, I'm happy with the stage presence now. It was a little rough at first, but I think we're good now.
Yeah, you're at an optimal level of shaking and facing directly away from people, as opposed to like there's a correct amount of shaking that looks intense, and then there's the other, which is like, that looks like fear, and there's a sweet spot there, I swear. But yeah,
it was fear the first time
for sure. But yeah, you said that you know, you recorded with your friend and everything, so that made that whole process like much easier. We didn't cover, like, did you track separately from the band? So was that like everyone was done and then it's your turn to get up there and do this? Like, what was that like for you as far as, you know, that whole process goes, like sort of not having the whole force of the band? Like,
yeah, so I was really lucky. Me and Carter were both really lucky because we were both a little bit nervous to like scream into a microphone without any like anything going on around us noise wise, mm-hmm. because we'd never really done that before.
Yeah.
So I asked Marshall when we were recording, I was like, will it be possible for us to just like play this like a show and then like mix it from there? And Marshall was like, yeah, for sure. So we actually, it's all recorded like live at the same time.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, we just like tweaked it a little bit from there, which I'm really glad we did it that way.
Yeah, it would be the most comfortable experience for you know, someone, especially like, you know, their first time recording and stuff for sure.
Yeah, like I'm sure the next time will be different, but I'm super happy with the way the EP turned out, and I had a fucking blast recording it. So, yeah, very lucky for that.
Yeah, I have literally never recorded that way, and it's
Really?
weird to think about that. But yeah, I mean, even like the very first time like I ever recorded was like okay, like excuse me. It's like, here's some headphones that are not loud enough at all. Go ahead and like do your full volume voice, like to where the only thing you're possibly going to hear is yourself. And it was just this,
Yeah.
you know, a bunch of awkward sort of learning curve-ish
Yes,
experiences. And
that sounds scary.
yeah, but I mean, it wasn't, it probably wasn't until like, I mean, I don't think that I even ever recorded microphone in hand until I did the Birthsight EP like a couple years ago. Like that was
Really?
the first time I ever even did that. I was just like, I just got so used to doing the other way. And then I was just like, you know what? I want to try something. I want to try doing this and see if it's fun. And it was fun.
Yeah.
But I,
When we go ahead, I'm
oh
sorry.
no, it's like I was just gonna say I haven't done it again since. Like I probably will on the next Birthsight EP just to, yeah, I don't know, keep it consistent. But like, yeah, it was fun.
When we recorded, Carter had like a like your standard microphone. And then I was holding this like bass drum microphone or something that didn't really have like a handle on it. It was just like it was supposed to go on a stand and then like, you know, sit in front of a bass drum. But I was holding that and I had to like hold it a certain angle and distance away from my face at all times. So that was definitely strange to be screaming into a drum mic, but I think it turned out great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really happy with
Yeah. I guess it was a unidirectional, like, so where it's just like you kind of have to aim where the sound is going.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. Like I have a few types of mics, and there's I don't record with this one very often because it's more just like a whatever, but I have like one of those, you know, Shure 50s, which is like the Elvis looking one, you know,
Oh,
and
yeah.
like you can be anywhere and that thing will pick you up. Like you could be upstairs, you know, for all I know. And then there's, yeah, just like, you know, the certain other ones that are really dialed in for whatever. And was it just because you're sort of running out of mics that you ended up with that one? Or was it more like they were trying to, like, they thought that it had the right frequency range for your voice or?
I am not exactly sure how we settled on the drum mic. It's like where we recorded, it's called Melancholy House in Ohio, and it's like a real like DIY like house venue that they also happen to record in like the living room. So I don't know if that was just what Marshall had or what.
Yeah, I mean,
But
it could have been a number of reasons. I didn't know if they said anything specific, but yeah, it's like, you know, definitely for sure a possibility where it's just like, well, we've got 10 microphones on the drum kit right now, and then three on the guitars and the bass, and well, we didn't know we were gonna do the vocals like live, so we got a couple mics, and we're just gonna make do, you know. But yeah, it all worked out in the end. It all sounds great. But yeah, you know, you said that you all have been a band since last summer, and the EP just came out, and so a lot of times it's like, you know, I want to chat with folks like when the thing just came out, because that's when, you know, you can really push it for people to hear it, and people are excited to talk about it. But like, you know, assuming there's like some more songs that you all didn't record and stuff, like what are your plans as far as like, you know, this summer coming up? Like, are you planning on doing more recording soon, or do you have some shows lined up to chat about? Or
yeah, so when we recorded the EP, we have I think 7 songs total, or maybe 6, I'm not quite sure. But we recorded everything, like we recorded all the songs we had, with except for one, because we weren't quite ready for that one. But we do have some songs like stored up for future use now. I'm not sure how much I can say about it on here, but we are doing a split with someone. Mm-hmm. Later, it should be out later this year. We're very, very, very excited about that. And then we do have shows coming up. We're playing with Snag on April 25th in Columbus. That'll be pretty cool.
Oh yeah.
And then we've got a couple here and there, just I think most of them are in Columbus this summer. And then I don't know if you're familiar with Oliver Glenn Records, yeah. DIY label from Michigan, but they're putting together like a pretty cool festival, Scrams Fest. It'll be in Lansing, Michigan. That'll be our first out-of-state show on July 4th. I'm so excited for that. Cannot believe it. I hope I was allowed to say something about it because they haven't formally like announced it yet.
Well. We've got breaking news here.
Oh yeah, hope I don't get in trouble.
Well, I mean, it's coming up pretty fast, so we should, you know, get people talking about it one way or another, right?
Yes, I'm so excited.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Yeah, that I don't that label is really like come up really fast, and they've got a lot of really cool stuff that they've been doing. But yeah, that sounds awesome. And you know, give my buddies from Snag the love from us, you know, if they're not listening to this. But yeah, it's been really cool, like actually getting to chat with you instead of just like passing comments online and whatnot. Before we take off, is there anything else we should chat about, or like, do you want to tell people like where's the best place for people to catch up with what y'all are doing?
So first I want to say thank you for the callers and the House Records. They're like a DIY label out of Akron, and you know, they reached out to us before we had played any shows, before we had any music out. And Zach, he really like kind of took a gamble on us, but you know, it means so much to me that he was like willing to work with us and support us and try and get us on shows. We really support you, Zach. So thank you. If you want to like reach us, the only social media we have right now is, the Instagram, just the band name. And then we're on like every streaming service pretty much. Spotify, it's on Bandcamp, and the lyrics are only on Bandcamp as of right now. We're on like fucking Apple Music, YouTube, all that shit. But yeah, thank you. The caller is in the house. I love you.
And that was my conversation with Lacey Jade. Thank you so much, Lacey, for taking the time to chat with me. Thanks to all of y'all for listening wherever you are as well. Make sure you stop by patreon.com/humanmachine and check out what's going on. Until next time, take care and do good things.